This week, the tours have weird energy too. I also talk about some extreme ghosts. How bad does it really get? And I got a little setup for future shows by talking about the three most haunted hotspots in the Niagara region. Now, as I already mentioned, last Friday and Thursday, I did the Hamilton's Dark History Tour, and the Thursday one was a private tour, the Friday one was the public one, and I was a little weirded out. Let's put it that way. There was some strange energy with the tour right from the start. And I'm not talking about the people. People were absolutely wonderful. It was more around the tour group and what was the feel in the city. Now, I'll give you an example. It was mostly to do with cars, funny enough, and also people walking by. We had a couple of comments from the background. Now, I'm used to this. This is not a huge deal for me. Niagara on the Lake is the worst for it. If I'm leading a tour, I could be in the climax of an amazing story and just about to bring it home, and then somebody from across the street yells out, "Ooh!" Needless to say, I am not a fan of that. I never get angry. One thing I've learned over the years is that you never get angry, that you just kind of go with the flow. So that's what I did. And kind of a different occurrence though when you're crossing streets, and like the cars are, they're far away. I'm usually very careful. I'll wait until there's a nice big gap and then cross the group and tell the people in the back, okay, if the car's coming, just stay back. But for the most part in the past, you know, we've crossed and the cars have slowed down. They were very nice and respectful. But I noticed, I don't know, is this the weird energy of last week? It's on the Thursday tour, I had somebody who basically didn't slow down. So she did. She didn't like try and hit anyone, but then went by kind of close to the people at the end and then got caught at the red light ahead. So it's not like she even made some special time or anything like that. It was just, I guess, to be mean. I really don't understand. And then on Friday was the peak of the weird energy. We were crossing the street behind City Hall, and we were waiting forever. It was just perfectly spaced cars. And at one point, as a couple ladies in the tour, they had started crossing. And at this point, there was another car coming. It looked like the car was slowing down. So I didn't have an issue with that. So I went across and I waved to the guy as to say thank you. But I don't know, maybe my wave looked like I was telling him to stop. I don't know, maybe I came off as being a rude fella. And because he was just like inching closer and closer to the group. So I got everybody across. Once everybody was crossed, he then sped by and turned down the street. And I thought nothing of it. But then somebody in the group told me he flipped us the bird. So I didn't see it personally. And even if I had, I wouldn't have done anything about it. There's no reason to. It's just, it was so weird. It's like to happen once, I can understand, but to happen twice, I don't know. I'm not a over the top, grand naysayer. I don't think that the downtown core in general is changing anyway. I mean, there's always changes, but nothing that would, you know, warrant these types of, impatient drivers. Like as I go back to the day, downtown was kind of an area that gave me pause before leading the tours. And I'm going to give you a really good example. So I'm leading the downtown Hamilton Ghost Walk. This is years ago. So this is back, I think the Tivoli was still the Tivoli had fallen maybe a couple years before that, prior to that. So let's say 2006, 2007, give or take. And I'm leading the tour. We used to go to the Tivoli Theater, and I don't know, maybe just because I wasn't that experienced, because now I'm not sure I'd go down there with a tour group. But standing across the street from the Tivoli, talking to a group of about 15 or 16 people, and these two fellows walk up from behind, I can see them coming. And if I remember correctly, I told the group to kind of move to the side so they weren't blocking the sidewalk, but I didn't realize until they got closer that they were kind of swaying a bit. And I had figured they'd were enjoying themselves with a certain type of liquid that would remain nameless. So they were not of sound mind, and they kind of didn't touch anyone. They pushed past the group, and the side street across from the Tivoli was behind me. So they got about halfway in the side street, and one of the guys, I'll try and clean this up as much as possible, he basically squatted down and looked like he was going to defecate. That's a good scientific word to use. He looked like he was pretending that he was going to defecate in front of the group. So this older lady in the front, I was dumbfounded. I was just a young, brand new, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed ghost guide. I didn't know how to handle these situations yet. So I was just silent. I didn't know really what to do. And this older lady in the front had the perfect line. She said it straight to their face, was like, your mothers must be so proud of you. And it got a laugh from the crowd. So I guess that didn't sit well with the other guy, not the defecator, but the other one. He walks up to me. I got my cape on, so I guess I was the target. And he started putting his hands in my face. He put his shoulder against my shoulder and then tried to put his hands in my face. And I had to shove him backwards. And at that point, I was like, okay, this is the type of situation that you just get out of. Even in my inexperience, I still knew, just get out of that situation. So I did. I walked the group away, and thankfully they also walked away. So I'll tell you, though, in all these weird situations that have happened over the years, the last one as a reminder, I've always come back to the guests on the tour, and I always have wonderful, wonderful guests on the tour. And in the Hamilton's Dark History tour that just passed, both the private and the public ones, it's just nice to see people coming out and enjoying it, and they're always very understanding about weird things that go on. I've never had any issues like that. So to the guests, never any weird energy. It's usually the stuff going on around us. As long as it's not too bad. Actually, it's funny, as a side, the worst thing that was ever yelled out to me on a tour, you would think, oh, it's obviously downtown Hamilton. It wasn't. It was in Niagara-on-the-Lake. And this completely caught me off surprise. I'm not going to repeat the words they said, but there was kids on my tour, and they just drove up. It was on Queen Street, which is like the main street, and they just pulled up right beside the tour, rolled down the window, and yelled out, I'll say the F word was part of that. I'll say the other F word that, again, I don't want to say, and they called me it, and then drove away, like peeled away. And that one, another one where all I could think to do was just apologize to the group. I was like, I'm so sorry. I mean, I lead tours in Hamilton. I've never had anything like that happen to me. It's like, and the little kids, they had a look of shock on their face. It's like they just learned some new words. I'm probably just being too innocent. I'm sure these kids already knew those words. So that's just me. But great groups on the Dark History tours. I am just tickled pink that the history tour is doing well. Not just the Hamilton one. I've thrown in a Niagara one as well. And they're both doing splendidly. And that makes me a very happy person, because back when the Ghost Walks first started out, to have a history tour in general do well was just unheard of. People came for the ghost stories, and we were happy to provide that. We loved doing it. But to have a history tour, it was sort of like a passion project for me. So I enjoyed bringing in those scripts and focusing on that very interesting history in Hamilton, and then later Niagara, which is recently Niagara. But to have it actually succeed and have people come out for it again makes me super happy. My biggest pet peeve in life is not representing history well. I don't know if you guys know that what I'm talking about. If you've been to like a museum and you've heard a story, they'll spend 10 minutes talking about the type of stone that was used in the outside walls and how much the stone cost to purchase. And, oh, in this room, they used to hold parties. End of story. There's no like follow-up on what happened during one of the parties. Like, there's no real connection that's given to the history. I'll give an example. I won't mention the location, but it's still a wonderful location. But I was doing the tour, and they had gone through all that not so interesting information, and they come to this point. We're standing in the owner's study, and the guide points to a picture, a portrait of the owner, and says, "Oh, this was painted not long after he almost drowned." Like capsized a boat, drowned, and lost all his possessions. And then I'm sitting there, I'm like, I'm leaning forward, and I'm just waiting for her to continue on with the story. And then she's like, okay, moving on. And I kind of lean back. I was like, oh, geez. And I wanted to yell out, tell me more. But unfortunately, she had taken off to the next stop, and I didn't learn any more about that. That would have been an interesting story. And we go to the kitchen, and it's talking about the age of the table, and there's another table that looks a certain way, and I'm like, oh, I missed my opportunity. So that is a pet peeve of mine. So I made sure, you know, you focus in on stories of history. You're gonna pull the interesting facts. And maybe it's just because I just don't have the attention span to handle non-interesting facts that pushes me to only find the strange, the odd, the interesting, and to convey that. So I digress. Weird tour energy in the end, it's common. So I've learned over the years how to handle it. But yeah, there was something strange about last week. I don't know. You let me know if you also had a strange last week. Maybe it was just overall world energy. Okay. Moving right along. I had a message sent to me recently, and it had to do with extreme ghosts. So it got me thinking. Now, my own personal experience with ghosts over the years have never reached the level of a horror movie. And I've always found that some people, there are other factors, I'll say, that can cause the extreme fear that goes along with an extreme ghost story. So it's not to say that these ghost stories don't exist. It's just I always take them with a grain of salt. So what I'm speaking of is the stuff that leads to almost like a violent occurrence. A possession in the sense where you believe that your body has been completely possessed and that you're being worked like a puppet, or anything that can lead to any type of violent act where you are physically assaulted and hurt in a very high way. Now, I'm not talking about being pushed on stairs or having scratches appear on your body. And by scratches, I don't mean it breaks the skin, that you can just see where the scratch occurred. I am not talking about that. I do believe in that wholeheartedly. I have seen experiences from reliable sources related to all of those. I've never experienced them personally, but I do believe in it. But I'm talking about the next level of stuff. So what is the most extreme experience that I've ever heard of or had in my own? And I've talked about some of this in the past with the Merritt House in St. Catharines. It's in a previous episode if you want to listen to it, where the spirit was there, and I knew it was there, and it created negative feelings, which is something that they can definitely affect because it's emotion, it's energy, but never to the point where it could physically harm you or mentally take you over. So when somebody asked me the question, what is the most extreme potential ghost story? It's never to the point where you need to be fearful or to the point that you need to run away from a situation. I mean, even the most extreme hauntings inside of a house, you could just learn to live with. But most people would rather not. And I understand that completely because, I mean, the idea of having someone who's a dead person, like, for me, the creepiest part of any ghost is the idea that that person is dead and that their body is in the ground, yet they're haunting a certain location. That's what freaks me out, the idea that behind that. So if you can get beyond that and know that it's not like the horror movies, then usually the most extreme experiences can be taken with a grain of salt. Now, I do have an example for you. And this is one where something had to be done for obvious reasons. And really, it came down to liability reasons because this was a restaurant. So you have customers coming in and you don't want the physical aspect to inadvertently hurt someone who's not aware. So if you go into a haunted, or if you're living in a haunted house, you're aware. So you can be ready for anything that might occur. But when it's a business like this, it's very different. So the restaurant I'm going to use as an example is Cork's in Niagara-on-the-Lake. Now, just a quick warning, the following story does some domestic disturbance. So Cork's restaurant used to be known as The Buttery. Before that, it was another restaurant. I'm sure there was other versions of it before that too. It's been around for over a century and a half. There has to be. But we're going to go all the way back towards the beginning when it was a residential home. Now I'm going to stop here because this is when the resident ghost comes from. Now we have a man and wife living inside that home, and all of a sudden the wife's parents die. Now how does this change their living arrangement? Well, the wife, she had a brother. Let's call him Robert. And the only way to describe Robert was to say he wasn't quite right in the head. He had problems with rage, and he physically hurt other people, and when he got caught, he was thrown in the local jail cell. Now, the only people to ever bail Robert out were his parents, but when they died, who could take care of him other than his only family member, his sister? So his sister begs her husband to allow Robert to come and live with them. Eventually, he reluctantly gives in. Robert moves into the house and tells himself he's never going to have his problem again. He loves his sister. He loves the situation. He wants it to work. So he's going to do what he thinks is best, and he's going to take all of the rage and shove it down way deep. Simple, right? Not really. These triggers would start happening inside the house. He saw the way that his sister's husband treated his sister. He loved her very much and didn't want to see this occurring, so it brought back those feelings of rage. And then at one point, he's begging her to just leave him and they can move away together and they'd be happy. But she said no. She said, I made a vow to the man and I'm sticking to it. But Robert held on to that little bit of hope she would finally leave. Hope that then crushed when she comes in with what she thought was amazing news, saying, Robert, guess what? You're going to be an uncle. I'm pregnant. Now, Robert didn't see this as wonderful news. He saw this as his sister now being trapped in this situation forever. So he had to do something about it. Now, thank goodness, just in time, the voices had come back to Robert's head to tell him exactly what to do. Go to the kitchen, find a large knife, and then find the husband. That's what he did. Passing by the sister in the hallway, she says, looks into his eyes and sees the rage has returned. She follows him into the kitchen. As he grabs the knife, she grabs his shirt, trying to shake him out of the trance, but it only makes him angry. He pushes her aside through an opening, doesn't even care. Walks through the house, finds the husband, stabs him to death, and pulls his bloody corpse into the basement. Now, getting to the bottom step, and looking to his left, he can see his sister is lying there, her head twisted at an awkward angle. She was dead. just meant a bigger hole to dig. And that's what he did. So to this day, they talk about the resident ghost of Corks, and when you think about the history of the place, you immediately assume that it must be Robert, right? I mean, that was the first one that came to my mind. If you have this guy who has this extreme rage and energy inside of a place, he's the murderer, you know, he's the one that's probably going to be haunting it, but he's not. And you think the husband, right, the way he was murdered in the house, it's not him either. So who's left? The sister, the wife. She is the one that haunts Corks. So getting back to the extreme side of this story, it's what she does in the building, especially at its worst level, that makes it extreme. So she would like throw things around. They would hear her up on the second floor. They would see her inside the basement. But the worst of all is how she physically affected people. It got to the point where she was trying to push people downstairs. So there it is right there. That is the element that caused the owners of the restaurant to seek help. Now, this was occurring in the 1980s. It was when it was called the Buttery, which was there for quite a few years. And it's the owners of the restaurant that actually sought out. They wrote a letter to the local church, and they wanted an exorcism to be done on this woman to you know, hopefully calm things down, that their customers won't be in danger of falling downstairs anymore. And guess what? The church normally wouldn't approve such a thing at a small level, but they approved it. So you have a priest coming over from St. Mark's. They say he performed the exorcism, and when he was done, that things did actually calm, that the pushing on the stairs didn't happen anymore. However, the woman is still in there, of course. She's seen mostly in the basement now, seeing a very vivid ghost that appears. But thankfully for Corks, who now owns it, that they don't have to deal with anyone being pushed downstairs anymore. So what is it, this extreme ghost story? What's wrong with the spirit, right? Why? What is the difference between having slight energy affected in a haunted house to having it physically affect the people in there, or even things getting thrown around, what they call a poltergeist? What is it? Well, I've talked to many psychics over the years, and some have told me that they've given me the term restless. So there's a difference between a spirit that is just existing and a spirit that is gone to the level of being restless. So existing is one thing, restless is another. So I would say, in my own personal opinion, existing is a low level of energy. It could be residual, just left over, and that's not actually the conscious spirit. But restless is on a different level. So there's a different level of energy for whatever reason. Again, I come back to that. That's why I'm shocked it wasn't Robert that was haunting the building, because his energy was extremely restless and extremely powerful with rage. Rage is a powerful emotion. But it then falls on the sister. So she was restless, probably what, because of the suddenness of her death in the story, is that, you know, maybe she didn't come around to accepting it and moving on. So she's just trapped there for whatever reason. And that would create restlessness. So, you know, reaching out with her own rage, she affected the living. So, but even with this being what I am deeming air quotes extreme, it is not as bad as the horror movies. And like I said, you can live with this. You can live with the most extreme experiences that I've ever had or noticed in my life, or been told stories about in my life that have been deemed reliable or true. You can learn to live with it. It's not like there's no axe that's going to fly off the wall and hit you straight in the head. This is not going to happen. I that's why when people come to me and they say that and they're scared of it, I said, okay, I understand the idea of being scared of having a ghost. It's like your personal space is being invaded, and by somebody, as I mentioned, is in a grave somewhere. It is freaky as all heck. But again, you can learn to live with it. So in my experience with extreme ghosts, it's never all that majorly extreme. And I would recommend, if you are in a haunted house or haunted apartment or whatever, that you do live with it. This is a wonderful life experience. I know it's kind of ironic that dealing with a dead person is a wonderful life experience, but it really is. Because if you can get over that natural fear that occurs with it, you become desensitized, unless you enjoy the fear, unless you like being scared. that's your thing, if that's your thing, and I'm not going to judge you. But getting over it is a huge thing. Like when I first started out in the paranormal as an investigator, I was freaked out about going into haunted places at night, even if I wasn't alone. I was still freaked out because in the back of my mind, I thought, okay, what if it is like the horror movies? What if something is going to jump out and say boo and give me a real life jump scare? You know, what if that's going to happen? And it never did. I've had experiences over the years, but it never got to that extreme. So then I realized, okay, I don't need to be as scared. And then you become desensitized, and ghost stories still freak me out, and I still love telling them. And horror movies still freak me out because you don't know what's going to happen in that moment in this fictional movie. So you're not going to lose that. But what you will lose is that what I think to be, in a way, not completely, an irrational fear of real ghosts. And then that way you can even get a little bit more connected on an energy level with the house or structure that you live in. Okay, so the final subject that I want to cover before ending the podcast, this is hopefully going to set up future episodes, because I want to talk about all these places. I've already talked about the number one. Spoiler alert. I've already talked about the number one in previous episodes. But the other two definitely deserve coverage. So these are my picks for the top three Niagara haunted hotspots. My experience, of course, I am from the city of Hamilton, but my experience in Niagara is robust. It is my ghostly home away from home. And I've visited tons of locations over the years around there and done my own makeshift investigations or featured them on the tours. And these ones have stood out the most. So I don't know if you're guessing or you're thinking of a few of your own right now, if you're from the area. And again, if you want to share these with me, please do. You can just shoot them over to ggdaniel@ghostwalks.com. So I'll go in reverse order, like on how David Letterman used to do his top 10 lists, because it's more dramatic. Number three, Drummond Hill Cemetery. Now, I've been very clear and honest over the years with anybody who would spend the time listening to me to tell them that I do not believe cemeteries are haunted. This is not a popular opinion, and I know it, but it doesn't make sense to me, because I believe ghosts to be energy. So when the body gets to a cemetery, there's no energy left. So where's the energy going to come from these fields? If anything, I've walked through so many cemeteries in the daytime and at night or in the evening, if I'm walking my dog or whatever, and I find them to be the most calm places to go for a walk. Because not a lot of people go to cemeteries to go for a walk. Those who do, this is kind of an inside secret I probably shouldn't be sharing to you, but if you want a quiet place to go for a walk, that's it. Cemeteries. If you're near a large one, I'm not too far from the Hamilton Cemetery, so I'll go through there. Not only do you get the beautiful artwork from the gravestones that surround you, but it's very calm and quiet. As I mentioned, it's just a lack of energy. You can just really veg out while you're walking through there. So for that main reason, when it comes to energy, it's the reason why I don't believe cemeteries are haunted. But coming back to Drummond Hill in Niagara, you might be screaming right now, well, what about that one? It's number three on your list. Well, this is different. So where Drummond Hill Cemetery is located, this was the site of the Battle of Lundy's Lane. This is part of the War of 1812, which affected the entire region, not just Niagara, but even up to Hamilton. And the Battle of Lundy's Lane was one of the most violent and unfortunate battles in the entire war. I remember hearing, I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was over 1,000 people died. And hearing some of the stories, I guess because of how the hill was situated. So they would shoot off the cannons during the battle, and the smoke from the cannon fire wouldn't dissipate. I don't know if there was fog as well, but that it got to the point that you couldn't even see the person coming at you. So there was a lot of friendly fire. So, you know, they were killing their own men and not realizing that they were doing it because you were basically just shooting blind. So this was a very tragic and energetic battle that happened in the spot where the cemetery is today. So there you have a land that's seeped in blood, and you have an energy that remains behind. And with those two things mixed together, you now have the potential for ghost stories. And I know personally, when I took a bus tour there one time, there were a few people who experienced, during the daytime, mind you, where they looked back and they saw what they thought were shadows standing over some of the gravestones. And as well, they have seen what looks like British soldiers. They see the redcoats walking among the graves. Usually that one happened at night. So you mix in all that history and the stories that are happening today. And yes, this is a rare occurrence. There are other ones that I've heard of over the years, but this is one that's driving distance for me, and a rare occurrence that a cemetery that can be truly haunted. Number two is the Victorian House in Niagara-on-the-Lake. Now, this one would have never even hit my radar. Other than I love it, its beauty, because to me it looks like a haunted Barbie's dream house. But it wouldn't have hit my radar if it wasn't for the ghost walk that I led. And I've led the Niagara-on-the-Lake ghost walk for, oh geez, going on 14, 15 years now. And I've had so many experiences when it comes with cameras in front of that building. Because here you have a perfect test group for the ghosts, so that you could see how this spirit is oddly reaching out to the cameras. It makes sense to me that it's happening. I mean, energy from the ghost is affecting the energy from the camera and causing the strange things to happen. So what we've seen over the years, me personally, are the batteries draining from full to nothing. And then the weird occurrences when you walk away from the house, I would always tell the person, okay, don't touch your phone or your camera until we're away, and then wait maybe like 20 minutes or so, and then try and turn it back on. And every single time that I've actually had the presence of mind to tell them to do it, they've hit the button and it's come back to the original battery level. It's the strangest thing, because if the battery did drain for whatever weird reason, that's one thing. You could say, oh, the battery's old or whatever, not holding a charge. But to have it come back, that's the impossible feat. So that made me the believer that it was the ghost reaching out once you got away. Couldn't affect it anymore. Other occasions, an image appeared 13 times in someone's gallery. And on a couple occasions, it wiped out all the pictures. And this is the time that I learned that the ghosts can affect the physical device, but they haven't figured out how to get to the cloud yet. Because I actually talked to one of the people who lost their photos after the tour. I shot them an email. I said, I'm sorry that happened to you. Is everything okay? And they were like, oh, it's okay. It was backed up to the cloud. So the ghost wiped it out on the phone, but couldn't get to Google Drive or whatever they were using. But to have this strange occurrence kind of like reach out to the group is very strange. And it's not just that, is that the house over the years, it was a gallery. It's becoming something again. I'm not 100% sure, but I know there's finally some activity going on, like living activity, and that maybe we'll learn more, because a woman is known to be the resident ghost of the building. So when the cameras mess up, we're always just assuming it's the woman. She's reaching out. That's how she's affecting it. So because of this strangeness of the occurrence and the constant occurrences that are occurring, I had to add this one to my list. So the Victorian House in Niagara-on-the-Lake is number two. And the number one, I already kind of spoiled it earlier, I think, for some of you who figured it out, the Merritt House in St. Catharines. Now, this is the White House of Rock. If you haven't heard me talk about it before, go back to one of the previous episodes. I think I actually called it Merritt in the episode, if you want to search that up. It's M-E-R-R-I-T-T. And that's the last name of the man who built it, William Hamilton Merritt. He is also the guy credited with building the Welland Canal. So you have this prominent figure who is the one who created this beautiful house that still exists in all its glory as a radio station today. But you also have interesting history that surrounds it as a former military hospital, as a house, of course, so you have that, but it was also a part of the Underground Railway. And because of its connection to the Welland Canal, there's a sub-tunnel that goes from the canal to the basement of the house. It said there, yeah, that's made it very appealing for the Underground Railway, which I don't know if you know, Harriet Tubman lived in St. Catharines. So St. Catharines was a big part of helping escape slaves coming up from the States. But it also made it very popular long after, during Prohibition. So Prohibition is when they banned alcohol, and this was a perfect way to sneak illegal alcohol in. You think about it, right? You can bring it up the Welland Canal, you know, mixed in with a bunch of boats and legal goods, and then all of a sudden maybe a little rowboat can come and take it and just shoot off to the tunnel into the basement. So I can understand. I've actually tried to put myself in the mindset of a rum runner. I don't know what you do in your free time, but that's what I do in my free time. I try to think, what if I were Rocco Perry or Al Capone? You know, what if I was, like, how would I run my business? It'd be less murder. I will say that, less murder. I'm not as violent as they were, but how would I run the logistics side of it? That's what I'm thinking about. Don't think me a weird person, but back to it. Merritt House in St. Catharines has a very powerful history, and it also has a lot of very powerful ghost stories even today. So I talk about it ad nauseum, but the spirit inside that house is different, and that's the reason why it's number one. It's because of this spirit. I don't even know its name, because it was just messing with us when we went the investigation there. It called itself Booger. It's a stupid name, but it's on a different level. I've never experienced something so powerful. It tried to possess one of our psychics. It came to our homes afterwards. And as far as I know, it's still in there. It physically affected the house before we went in for our investigation. Like, this was undeniable proof that a spirit exists. Like, you can't question it as being anything natural. You know, what we went through proved it to me 100% that it was in there. And it's because of this one powerful entity, whoever it is, if it was even human at one time, it is now attached to this richly historic house. And you mix those two things together with the rich and strange history and the powerful energy that remains, and you have a place that just, you know, should be even higher than number one. There is no higher than number one, but it should be even higher than number one on the list. But number one is all I can give it. Well, that's it for the show this week. Thanks for listening. I hope you're enjoying the new format. I know I am, and it feels good to be more natural with you guys. And this is how I'm going to stick with it, and we'll see if it works out. I've also been thinking about introducing a second show every week. Now, currently we can call my show Ghost Wednesdays. So what I'm looking to introduce is something that I am tentatively calling Spiritual Sundays. This is another part of my personality. I am a very big fan of mindfulness. I meditate regularly. I use this as a way to live my life in a calm manner and to react to situations in a very compassionate and calm way. And it works well for me. So I've done this type of studying for years. decades even, and it's a big part of my life. So I thought, hey, you know what? It's also the kind of thing that psychics employ on a regular basis, whether they know it as well or not. And it is a way to kind of get you to be more intuitive to spiritual energy that might be around you. So it is connected to what I do for a living. Don't think this is me going off the rails here. This is a matrix level deep dive on reality. So if you go into a haunted place and you have a calm, silent mind from whatever mindfulness training you've done, you can hear things more. And I've noticed this. Your intuition is much stronger. So I don't know. You tell me what you think. ggdaniel@ghostwalks.com. If you like the idea of spiritual Sundays, I'll probably do it anyway, whether I hear it from you or not. But I don't know when I'll start it. Probably not this Sunday, maybe the Sunday after. I'll try and start doing some quick episodes and see how it feels. But, you know, my goal in a way is, if you're into the paranormal stuff, my goal will be to make you a psychic. So now you won't just have some light ghost experiences. Everywhere you look, you'll see ghosts. That's my goal. Terrify you. Anyway, we'll see how it goes. So, thanks for listening, everyone. I'll talk to you next week.